Hi, I'm Alex Hirsch, creator of Gravity Falls.
I'm Jeff Rowe, writer on Gravity Falls.
I'm Shion, I'm also a writer.
Shion, say your last name. Why don't you say your last name?
Shion Takeuchi, writer on Gravity Falls.
Thank you. I am Robert John Renzetti, supervising producer on Gravity Falls.
And I am learning Rob's middle name for the first time in my life.
Well,
everybody say your middle name real quick. Robert.
John's, what? Wait, what was it?
Robert.
Middle name, what's your middle name?
Oh, Michael.
Elena.
Elena, wow.
Wow.
That's beautiful.
Yes, thank
you. We're right now learning more about each other than we did in two years.
I'm going to call you Shion Elena from now on. Shion Elena. It's beautiful.
Road dogs. Thanks for letting me bring Candy and Grinda along for our road trip, Grunkle Stan.
The more the merrier. Just sign these nuts.
So, all right, roadside attraction. This episode, the main impetus from this episode came from the fact that between season one and season two, myself and a number of the team members of Gravity Falls, we had a little bit of time, and particularly our art director, he was expecting a child, and he was like, I'm never going to be able to go on another road trip for the rest of my life. So how about we try to create a Gravity Falls road trip? Who here was on that road trip?
I was there.
You were there? You
I guys? Think I'm the only person.
I was not.
I talked to you on the phone.
The first time I ever spoke to Shion, but you weren't actually there. I called you.
Yep.
Yeah. From Pixar. I was trying to convince Shion to leave Pixar and come to Gravity Falls.
It worked.
So we went on this road trip and we just decided, like, let's hit every single tourist trap. Like, from here to the southern tip of Oregon, we went to the Oregon Vortex, we went to Klamath Trees of Mystery. Jeff, where else did we go?
That was about it.
No, we went to the
mystery
Hill?
Spot. What about the mystery spot?
Oh, yeah.
We went to Confusion Hill. We went to Burl World, which is, like, these are all just real awful, wonderful tourist traps. California tourist traps and Southern Oregon tourist traps. And the idea was, like, let's just, like, absorb what this area of the world is really like.
Yeah.
And also, let's, like, get crammed into a tiny van for 3 days straight. Our art director, Ian, was sort of the dad of the group. He was driving. He was just telling us to pipe down because we were a little rowdy.
Such a calm, patient man. He was just, like, in control the whole time. We're jumping around in the car, climbing over each other. Mike Rianda had brought, like, a disco ball and air horns and might have been bubbles. I don't know what kind of weird stuff was going on, but he would just kind of, like, drive along, unfazed by everything.
Yeah, winding through these really steep roads while we were, like, rocking the van, and it was, like, slick from rain. And so we had such a wonderful time on this road trip, and Ian in particular had collected so much visual reference for what...
rub it in, guys.
We would have loved to have you there. We didn't know you yet. We were... We also were doing this thing where we left a little Bill Cipher everywhere we went.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We encouraged fans to, like, oh, see if you could find the Bill Ciphers, thinking, like, we're in the middle of nowhere. We're in, like, Weed, California, next to some, like, you know, just, like, abandoned... you know, like, road stop or whatever. And, like, people always found our bills to the point where it got a little frightening. Like, like, the show's getting a little bigger than we realized at that point. Like, we kind of sensed the fandom. And so, like, the thought was, it would be nice if we did a road trip episode. This episode was kind of, there was a card on the wall, I think, that said road trip episode for a really long time. And at this point, we were at a point in the season where, if I recall correctly, this was surrounded by a lot of, like, load-bearing episodes.
Yeah.
were trying to figure out Weird Mageddon, and we were working on Dipper and Mabel versus the Future, and there was all these huge continuity-based episodes, and, like, we were being drawn really thin. It was like, we just need, like, an easy one. Like, what's just something on the board we can grab? You know, like, and I think, like, probably my only issue with this episode is, like, I do wish, like, we could have had it be a little earlier in the season, because it arrives at a moment where everybody's hyped for continuity, and so people are like, what? Like, just a cute little one-off. I wanted the world to blow up. It's like, wait, next week the world blows up. Trust us. And with the hiatuses the way they are, there'd often be this long pause before an episode. Because this is often very common in kids programming in particular. They'll backlog some episodes, and then they'll just hold on to them. And, you know, they don't air them as soon as we finish them.
Right.
They air them when they decide to air them.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes they'll have a long pause before an episode, and that could almost be like a drum roll. And, like, some episodes it's like, yeah, this is a load-bearing episode. Other episodes, like, we're just going to watch, like, Stan sabotage a bunch of tourist traps.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. This was, me and Josh co-wrote this.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was kind of like a 1-1 split. Like, Josh wrote the first half of the episode and I wrote the second half. I mean, we outlined it all together as a group. You know, the result is the solid gold you're seeing on screen right now. Just not wall-to-wall perfection.
Upside downtown, the nausea capital of the state. Whatever you do, don't use the bathrooms.
Rude dog! Woof, 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 woof.
Where did Upside Downtown come from?
I think that was a Josh thing. I think we just came up with a, when I say us, the writers in general came up with a, like a list of 20 different tourist trap ideas, and this is just one of the ones that that stuck.
Well, and there was an amazing joke that I, like, we had to cut for time, but I loved it, and it was the, what was it, Boyd Henneke Museum?
Oh, yeah.
Can you explain what that was?
That was another, that was like the Josh Weinstein specialty, and it was just like, there was a guy named Boyd Henneke, and no one knows who Boyd Henneke is, and you go to the tourist trap and you don't really find out who Boyd Henneke is, and the whole thing just exists because Boyd Henneke.
I think it was like a riff on like you might find a obscure museum somewhere on the road to something that you have no idea what it is, and you hope maybe, I guess, by the time we're done, we'll know. But so it's just, there's a lot of people saying Boyd Henneke like 50 times. It always made me laugh because it was like, it's the comedy of frustration. You're like denying your audience a true setup and then you're denying them a true payoff.
Yeah. What's there was also Neon Leon.
Neon Leon. That was tough. That was tough to lose.
That was a hard cut. That was,
there were a lot of hard cuts. We had too much material for this.
Let's just take a moment of silence for Neon Leon.
I really love Neon Leon. What was it? It was just some guy who has like Neon Leon's World of Neon.
It was just I'm Neon Leon.
Didn't he sing a song or something?
He wore like neon clothes or something.
Didn't he have, like neon tubes as
and
part
it was like
of his
rule
costume?
One: don't touch Neon Leon.
Yeah.
Rule two: enjoy the show or something. He was like very persnickety
about how his show should be enjoyed.
Yeah.
I believe it worked. What do I do now? Do I email her?
No. You practice. The more girls you talk to, the better you get at it.
Grunkle Stan, these tips are priceless.
And that's just the tip of the advice berg.
One of the I think this whole second act is a storyboarded by Emmy Cicerigo. When you see something like Dot Crom, you're like, yeah, only she could have thought of that.
Oh, did the jokes about the corn maze make it into the final thing?
They ended up getting cut for time as well. There was a really funny scene I think Josh wrote.
Yeah. There was this runner about like Seuss living in the corn maze and meeting corn people who had lived in there for like 50 years.
Yeah.
And it was like...
there was a whole corn culture.
Yeah, corn family.
And I said to the bouncer, where's your ID, ugly? That's where I got this scar.
Grunkle Stan, I gotta say, this was one of the best days ever. Look!
Alonzo, who storyboarded this sequence, said specifically that his inspiration was the Goofy movie.
Yeah.
There is a scene with the pig leg Pete. It's very touching. I've made the same staging.
What's the impression of me when they do when they leave the room? Just a lot of grabbing my head and looking angry?
It's like chewing on like a Sharpie. I'm like, yep. That's an idea. That's a good one. That's okay. If it was an episode of Futurama, it would be like this. It would be Fry would learn this about Leela, and then it would just like you'd pitch an entire episode in 2 minutes, and
I'm so sorry.
Pace back and forth, and we just
and destroy three Sharpies.
Yeah. Everything in the office that you touched was just like chewed up.
Yeah, mangled.
Your saliva.
I chew my pen.
Pens.
I chew on my
pencils.
Phone. I had a phone case that I ate
what,
right
through. What, you chewed on your phone? I didn't know you chewed on your phone.
Yeah,
well.
I had one of those plastic phone cases and I bit the thing in half.
Wow, that's not good.
I don't know what it is. It's like while I'm thinking, I have to. Everyone has like a weird fidget that
they
do.
Sure, of
course. Pacing and chewing are mine for some reason. Well, there's a lot. As you're probably getting a sense from listener, if you're still listening, I'm so sorry. Is that like we all became really close friends as a process of writing on the show. And like there's a huge amount of just like weird inside jokes and like personal lore that came out of this. Cause like my belief is like, even though like the impression that he just did of me is super accurate, like took things really seriously. Like I was the guy who was just like always stressing out. Like also like the moment that we had a minute to breathe, like I wanted us to have as much fun as possible. Like,
I believe
you can't make funny stuff unless you're laughing, you know? And like there's, I hopefully we're going to see this on the DVD, like some of the weird,
driving
RC cars and just a lot of nonsense that went on.
Yeah, there was that night, there was the thunderstorm, and we all went out and shouted at the rain.
That really did happen. It sounds like something from, like, Juno, but that was actually...
Yeah,
there's a photo of me asleep on my couch with, like, 4 story artists in, like, stacking stuff on top of me from that night.
Yeah.
Spider creatures.
Even their made-up legends are better than ours. Today, the mountain falls.
Question. The backseat makes me carsick. Can I sit up front today?
Also question. I'm the size of two people. Can I have a whole seat to myself?
I don't know. Sure.
Woo, change up.
But wait, that means it'll be just me and...
Candy too. Sixth grade.
Oh, hey. You're sitting close.
So, Dipper, I was wondering, would you maybe want to walk around the Mystery Mountain with me today?
Sure. I mean, wasn't that already the plan?
I mean, just us, you and me, Candy and...
So this, I'll talk a little bit about the episode. So sure. Like, this location is specifically referencing the Trees of Mystery in Klamath, California. If you're ever up there, it's the best tourist trap I've ever been to. That big Paul Bunyan and Babe the Big Blue Ox, those are like a real thing that you can drive by on the roadside. And it's like, it's amazing. They've got all these giant redwood trees and all these like carvings by lumberjacks, like lumberjack art, like they did with axes. So this is all really, really specific to what it really looks like. The fog is something we encountered.
Candy's great. She's sweet and she's smart, but I've never thought of her like that. This is all moving way too fast. Okay, I just need to be honest with her and tell her I'm not ready for all this.
Don't you see what's happening here? That's your dumb obsession with Wendy getting in the way of your future. If you want to move on, you gotta say yes to whatever comes your way. Speaking of which...
But I don't want to lead her on.
Watch and learn. Whoa, I seem to have lost my number. Can I borrow yours?
Oh, you are a riot. What brings you here? We don't normally get men this handsome around these parts.
This section was storyboarded by Alonzo Ramirez Ramos. This character, what's her name? Darlene.
Darlene.
Alonzo, even though he was a board artist, was also one of our best character designers. Yeah. And nobody could have come up with a design like this.
Yeah.
Other than Alonzo, it is gross watching Stan flirt, but I like that I got to do the scene with Chelsea Peretti because she's a really funny comedian.
Oh, fancy.
Oh, I can't believe this is happening. A real date.
I wonder what they'll name the baby.
If I had a baby, I would name it Grenda too. The sequel.
One of the unique challenges of this episode was there was this idea that like Dipper is going to get like flirting advice from Stan, which is like Stan is clearly not a role model, clearly doesn't know what he's doing. Dipper's a kid who's trying to move on and doesn't know how, and Stan's just sort of like,
just say whatever you want, then you won't see him again. Other people don't have feelings, it's fine.
Like, we believe that Stan was the kind of character who could still be likable while kind of... We wanted Stan and Dipper to stay likable while also kind of, you know, like, learning a little bit of a lesson about, like, kind of projecting a false version of yourself and projecting false intentions, you know, as a tool, and not really considering the other people that are involved. And we thought that, you know, a character like Candy, who is a sweet character, like, being a little hurt by his kind of flippant false affections... would kind of show him, like, okay, I don't need to be like Stan. And by the end of the episode, I think they have a really sweet moment.
Yeah.
Stan's like, yeah, I know. I seem like I'm an amazing ladies' man, but believe it or not, I'm really... I live alone for a reason.
Dipper Pines, I thought you were a nice guy, but I guess you only care about yourself.
Candy, wait! I messed everything up. I gotta find Stan. He'll know what to do.
Oh, are you sure you want to go this deep into the forest? It's so scary.
Don't worry, Toots. That spider people stuff is just
an... this episode was directed by Sunil, I believe.
I think so.
And
yeah.
He did a really great job with a lot of the just how horrifying Darlene becomes.
Yeah. I think your contacts fell out.
This was...
Have you seen an old guy around?
Yes. Yeah, there's no story there.
False start. It's Matt Chapman's voice as Flame Retardant Raccoon, the favorite character, standout character, Flame Retardant Raccoon.
Cosplayers, take note. That's
we haven't seen him yet. I think Vaughn storyboarded this whole section.
Yes.
And did a really great job with it. I will admit, when I first saw the character design for the transformation from Darlene to the arachnomorph, It's one of the very few times on the show I worried that we had gone too far, because she rips her skin off in this stretchy way, revealing this horrifying...
I remember advocating for it. Like, no, it is proper. It is correct. It is right.
I was... She's growing extra legs and encasing me in web. Yeah, this is what dates are like for Stan. Every now and then, you could... For the listeners... When I start kind of yelling a line as Stan, it's because I know the joke is kind of corny and like I have to lean into it.
Yeah.
Women, right? Like the joke is Stan is an idiot.
Yeah. You tricked me.
I'm 80% certain you don't really. Ooh, spider dancing. Men will fall for
anything. Yeah, Chelsea was great as this character, and we do like that Stan. He thinks of himself as a con man and was so immediately conned by the spider woman who wants to eat him. Also, great detail, those spider web dream catcher earrings. I think that's an Alonzo detail.
From Alonzo's design. All right, here it comes.
This time, you're getting used for your body, which to my weird species is food. Allow me to slip into something more horrifying.
Oh my god.
Now keep in mind, now her whole face is the thing wrapped around
her stomach. Her waist.
There's a version of that that was worse that I did soften.
Yeah, we softened it a little bit, but thank god we didn't soften it too much.
I think in the original version there was like there were still guys in her lair that were like alive and not getting it. They're like, hey, that's cool, man. We're just waiting for Darlene to come back. What's going on here? Like, we're still hoping the date was going to go well.
Yeah, a bunch of dudes with just like male jewelry and like slick back hair.
Yeah,
just like getting ready for the date's going to go well anytime. I remember this was another late change in the episode was the idea that I think Candy ends up saving them.
Yeah.
Was that something that came in late or was that always part of the episode?
I don't remember. I feel like it wasn't there at first, and that we needed a win for Candy.
My concern was I was worried that Candy was, you know, she's part of this episode, but she's sidelined a little bit. We don't get to explore her very much. We set her up as really loving pamphlets for some reason, so I'm like, all right, if that's our setup, our payoff is using pamphlet knowledge. She's able to get them out of this. This is based on the Skytram ride in Klamath. Trees of Mystery, Klamath, California, which is really beautiful, and we left a bill up there. Go there, find it.
There's a Klamath, California, and that's not just like a clam pun for Mammoth, California. I'm learning a lot of things.
It does sound like a Flintstones
like a
pun.
I feel like it's Gravity not a real Falls name.
It's either real or I'm completely wrong, and I've been saying the wrong thing many, many times. We only do one takes of these guys, so...
enjoy. Alex and I are about to make a cameo.
There we are. Yeah, that's me and Rob inside that first cart there. Jeff, do you have any other memories from the road trip that we took that inspired this one?
No.
Well, you got all the anecdote juice, kids.
Yeah, that's about it. Just a lot of people in a car. Good times.
I was thinking to myself, I remember remarkably little from whatever time period this episode was. Like, was I in a fugue state? I don't know.
Were you bitten by another spider?
We did the table read of the first draft or something, and then Shion drove me to the dentist to get my wisdom teeth pulled. Because I was like,
oh yeah, I remember that.
So this for me, I would like wrote this in a fugue state. Like I was barely, I was in so much pain.
Weakness, a giant boot, a giant newspaper, a giant cup would also have been pretty bad.
Thank you for riding Trampian Skytrain. Tell your friends, it was a boring, boring ride.
Kid, that was ingenious! How'd you know that would work?
Useless travel pamphlets.
Stanny.
She's still trying it.
There we go.
Oh,
great.
Reverse is even better. You let me out,
right? What? I like that Stan at first is really upset, but then doesn't he briefly fall for it?
He does. I feel like that's a little unbelievable. We'd let it go for the sake of comedy. But yeah, I don't think Stan.
Oh yeah, oh no, I think Stan really thinks of himself as funny, and nobody other than Seuss has ever suggested.
That's true.
Stan saying that his comedy involves yelling and props is just like gives you a sense of how awful his comedy would be if it happened. I also like that we were able to come up with a use for the big Paul Bunyan. Like, spider gets crushed by a big boot. Makes sense. Yeah, all this architecture is really, really specific to what the tourist traps of sort of Northern California are actually like. And this might be my favorite scene in the whole episode, because I do think it's just really sweet that these guys are both just kind of losers at different ends of the age spectrum, you know?
Yeah.
And this is the one episode where Stan makes a reference to being married once.
Yep. But hey, let's give Stan a little bit of credit. He actually did help Dipper in a way. Like, Dipper was very successful talking to these various girls.
Well, Dipper got to forget about his previous crush for a minute. And that's, I mean, I think the nugget of truth within Stan's wisdom is that, like, you know, the way that you get past, you know, like a broken heart is just like putting yourself out there and talking to other people and like just not wallowing in it.
Yeah.
Because that's like just the fastest way to, you know, rebuild your own brain. The sequence was also storyboarded, I believe, by Emmy, and all this stuff about the apology and the way that the pamphlet fit together. That was really her idea. Yeah, she did really a great job of that. It's like a very sort of sweet conclusion.
That's true. True words have never been
spoken. Cut to all of us raving in the back of the van while Ian drives us through the mountains of Oregon. I liked that Stan gets his comeuppance for sabotaging the other roadside attractions. This is a slightly strange feeling episode in the sense that we never leave Gravity Falls in this series. This is the only time we ever did it.
Yep.
And I think it's just like there was such a love for those locations that we wanted to see a sense of them. I don't understand. I completely don't deserve this. Yeah, Stan doesn't understand. Are we gonna have to help clean this up? Nah, I'm sure Seuss will take it. Oh yeah, so this is our only other. I was pretty amazed that I think most viewers watching this episode really didn't notice that Seuss was left behind
until this moment.
Because we have Candy and Grenda.
It seems like the van is full.
I believe the code, the credit codes in this one makes elaborate reference to the movie Homeward Bound. About Seuss eventually finding his way home thanks to some sassy talking animals.
That sounds about right.
Persian cat.
A really good scarecrow.